Tracy Sable tonight on EWTN News Nightly. Major military operation. Israel launches a new offensive in the West Bank. We have analysis from Mideast expert Gershon Baskin. The Vatican and China. A closer look at the Holy See's approval of a new bishop in the communist country. Take a seat. Vice President Harris agrees to her first major TV interview since moving to the top of the Democrat ticket. How the Trump campaign is responding. And God is with them. What Pope Francis is saying about the situation for migrants across the world. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us on the Feast of St. Augustine. Our top story tonight, Israeli forces have launched one of their largest military operations in the West Bank, killing at least 10 Hamas militants. The Hamas-run Gaza Health Ministry says the Israelis blocked the roads leading to a hospital with dirt barriers and surrounded other medical facilities. An Israeli military spokesman says the moves were to ensure militants do not seek shelter in hospitals. Israel says that it is rooting out militants in the West Bank, while Palestinians claim it is an excuse to broaden the war. This comes one day after the Israelis pulled off a complex hostage rescue operation in Gaza. The hostage was released from the hospital today. All right, let's bring in Gershon Baskin, former Israeli Hamas peace negotiator, joining us now from Jerusalem. Gershon, great to be with you today. So what more can you tell us about this military operation that Israel is calling a counterterrorism operation?
Well, with the war going on in Gaza now for almost 11 months and about 150,000 Palestinians from the West Bank who used to work in Israel and don't work in Israel since the beginning of the war, there are people in the West Bank who haven't been able to put food on their table for all these months because they have no income. That's creating a lot of despair and a lot of unrest. And the poverty is increasing. The Palestinian Authority is not functioning. Most of the Palestinian Authority people are not getting their salaries either. The economic crisis is always something that portends security difficulties for Israel. And as Palestinians are being killed by Israel in Gaza, Palestinians in the West Bank are responding. Young people who don't have work and don't have anything else to do are organizing in cells to attack Israelis, Israeli settlers, and Israeli army. And last week, there was an attempt of a suicide bombing, apparently, in Tel Aviv that did not succeed in hurting any Israelis, but the person who was carrying the bomb was killed. And the Israelis decided that they need to do some deep undercover work and above-ground work by the army, going into refugee camps and cities and towns in the West Bank to root out any of these new cells that have been developed that might be producing another wave of suicide bombs.
And I understand today low-level ceasefire negotiations took place in Doha. Do we know if anything of substance transpired there today? And do you think the negotiators will be able to strike a deal in light of recent activities?
Right. There is progress being made on some of the issues, but the bottom line is that Benjamin Netanyahu, the Israeli prime minister, does want to end the war, and the requirement of Hamas for any kind of agreement is some kind of obligation to end the war. I would note that what they're negotiating is also not a good agreement. It's not good for Israel and it's not good for Hamas. It's talking about a six-week ceasefire during which time 32 Israeli hostages would be returned, but 76 Israeli hostages would remain in Gaza. Hamas doesn't believe that the ceasefire would carry on after 6 weeks, that Israel would renew the war. So what are they negotiating? I don't know. There is a possibility of a better deal on the table if the negotiators take it up, the United States, Qatar, and Egypt. My understanding is Hamas would agree to a three-week deal of returning all 107 Israeli hostages on the condition that the war ends, Israel withdraws from Gaza, and that Palestinian prisoners are also freed. This is the kind of deal they need to be negotiating, and then perhaps there'd be more motivation of everyone to get it done because we would have the hostages return and the war would end. If the war ends, it will also end with Lebanon in the north, and I think there'd be a general relaxation of terrorism in the West Bank as well.
Yeah, and Gershon, we also know, quickly, I do want to talk about this. The U.S. has moved more warships and aircraft carriers in and around the Middle East as a show of force to Iran. Do you think this will act as a deterrent to Tehran, and do you fear that a regional war is on the brink?
The regional war could be on the brink. The American power in the region, both in the Mediterranean, the Red Sea, and the Arab Gulf, is a clear sign to Iran, going back to President Biden's message of don't. Iran will think 10 times before they attack Israel under these conditions, knowing that the United States will hit back. Even though the United States doesn't want to get into a war at this time in the Middle East, or at any time for that matter, particularly during election season, but it is certainly a clear deterrent. If it was just Israel by itself, I think we would have seen it, an Iranian retaliation of what they believe was the Israeli assassination against Ismail Haniyeh on Iranian soil.
Gershon, so much more we can talk about, but unfortunately we're out of time. Thank you so much, as always, for your insights.
You're very welcome.
All right, now to the campaign trail. Vice President Kamala Harris and her running mate Tim Walz begin a bus tour of Georgia seeking votes. And Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump blasts the new federal indictment filed against him with just weeks to go before November 5th. White House correspondent Owen Jensen reports.
The bus tour by Harris and Walz will wind through rural areas in southern Georgia and end with a rally in Savannah on Thursday. And Trump, meanwhile, heads to Michigan and Wisconsin tomorrow and Pennsylvania on Friday.
Vice President Kamala Harris in Savannah, Georgia, meeting with supporters, campaign staff, small business owners, and voters today and Thursday. Democrats trying to win the critical battleground state. They need more than Atlanta and the suburbs that delivered for Joe Biden in 2020. The vice president's running mate earlier made a stop in Boston. That's where Governor Tim Walz addressed the International Association of Firefighters.
This is the time of year that talk is cheap. But that's why Vice President Harris is proudly part of the most pro-labor administration in history, unafraid to walk picket lines with workers demanding better pay and conditions.
Walz will face off against Trump's running mate at a debate in October. Senator J.D. Vance spoke to voters today in Erie, Pennsylvania. He says Kamala Harris is wrecking Pennsylvania's energy workers and driving up the price of a gallon of gas.
And we have a president right now and a vice president, Kamala Harris, who wants to raise the price of diesel, raise the price of gasoline, and have every trucker in this country drive an electric vehicle, which doesn't make a whole lot of sense, ladies and gentlemen.
Meanwhile, the new indictment against Donald Trump involving the 2020 presidential election. It keeps the same criminal charges, but narrows the allegations against him. Trump claiming that by bringing the new indictment, the Justice Department violated an internal policy against any investigative action that could affect a campaign within 60 days of an election. Trump writing, election interference. All these Comrade Kamala Biden hoaxes should be immediately dismissed. And a former Justice Department official adds,
the Constitution seems to suggest, and that's what the Supreme Court ruled on, that, in fact, we don't want to have our presidents hobbled with constant fear of prosecution by state and federal prosecutors.
Also, Kamala Harris and Tim Walz will be interviewed together on CNN. That'll air tomorrow night. Now, J.D. Vance was critical of Harris for not sitting by herself for that interview. And the first mail ballots get sent to voters in just 2 weeks. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
And breaking overnight, never-before-seen documentary footage of then-House Speaker Nancy Pelosi reacting to Trump supporters when they stormed the Capitol on January 6th. In the video, she refers to former President Donald Trump as a domestic enemy and puts the focus on the former president just hours after the riots. Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales joins us now from the Capitol with the very latest. Eric.
Good evening, Tracy. Yes, this video is amazing. The 50-minute documentary footage was shot by Pelosi's daughter. Now, HBO turned it over to the Republican-led House Administration Committee, which is conducting its own investigation of what happened that day. EWTN News Nightly obtained the footage from that committee. It shows the former House Speaker being taken to a secure location and frustrated over the rioters that they were able to stop the certification of the vote.
We're not.
Additional video footage then shows Pelosi and her staff leaving the Capitol for Fort McNair, where congressional leaders regrouped as the attack unfolded.
I feel responsible. I mean, we asked them. They put out a piece of paper saying, you know, go through the tunnel, don't go outside. They say they got stuff, but they can't tell us what it is. It's too prepared. They want the other side to know. We have responsibility, Terry. We did not have any accountability for what was going on there, and we should have. This is ridiculous. You're going to ask me in the middle of the thing when they've already breached the inaugural stuff that should we call the Capitol Police? I mean, the National Guard? Why weren't the National Guard there to begin with?
House Administration Oversight Subcommittee Chair Republican Congressman Barry Loudermilk put out a statement, quote, "For over 3 years, Nancy Pelosi has refused to take responsibility for her failure to secure the Capitol grounds on January 6, 2021. Instead, she has pushed the focus of the failure on President Trump. As Speaker, she controlled House operations and security on the House side of the Capitol." While the congressman made that assessment, Nancy Pelosi, as Speaker, was not in charge of Capitol security. That lies with the Capitol Police Board, which oversees the U.S. Capitol Police and approves National Guard requests. The footage then shows the former Speaker preparing for a press conference on January 7th, calling for the resignation of Capitol Police Chief Stephen Sun, and then going after former President Donald Trump by invoking the 25th Amendment.
Wait a minute. Let me just say this. I think our focus has to be on the president. Let's not divert ourselves. We're going to have an after-action review. I've never liked Sun. I think he should have been gone a long time ago.
Some lawmakers feel that the House Administration Committee investigation is meant to undermine the January 6th committee's findings, which blame President Trump for the Capitol riot. And by the way, a Kentucky man who is the first defendant to breach the U.S. Capitol was sentenced to 53 months behind bars. Michael Sparks also has to pay $2,000 in restitution. Tracy.
All right. Thank you so much, Eric, for that report. Well, French officials say that Telegram messaging app CEO Pavel Durov has been released from police custody. The French citizen was detained at an airport near Paris on Saturday. He is facing 12 counts in connection to alleged criminal violations on his platform, including drug trafficking and fraud. French authorities have handed Durov preliminary charges and barred him from leaving France. And we have a lot more still to come here on EWTN News Nightly, including new round of talks. A closer look at the likely discussion coming soon between President Biden and Xi Jinping. And the Vatican says that it is satisfied with the naming of a new bishop in communist China. We have a report from Rome. U.S. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan is in the midst of a three-day visit to Beijing. The meeting with China's top diplomat is aimed at keeping the channels of communication open amid strained relations. Sullivan and top Chinese Foreign Minister Wang Yi agreed to more military talks. A call between President Biden and Chinese President Xi Jinping will also be planned in the next couple of weeks. Both sides call the talks candid, substantive, and constructive. And for analysis, we turn now to Gordon Chang, author of The Coming Collapse of China and the soon-to-be-released book, Plan Red, China's Project to Destroy America. Gordon, thank you so much for being with us again. We always appreciate it. So what was your biggest takeaway coming out of these high-stakes meetings in China?
You know, everyone loves the idea that we're talking to the Chinese about these very contentious and consequential issues. And it sounds like we're making progress. But Jake Sullivan has talked to Wang Yi about five times now or so, and things just continue to get worse. So obviously dialogue is not working. And that means we've got to do things which are more coercive. And I know people don't want to do that. But if we don't, we're going to slide to war, because the course of the Biden administration has only led to a deterioration, a very frightening deterioration in East Asia.
Yeah, and Gordon, as we know, the U.S. and China have agreed to more military talks, as well as a phone call between Xi Jinping and President Biden. What do you think that signals?
Well, it signals the Chinese are willing to humor us. You know, the idea that we have these talks with China, and people think, well, we establish a constructive dialogue. The problem is that when we really need to talk to China during a crisis, Chinese generals and admirals don't talk to us. And they don't do that because they're afraid of actually saying something and getting ahead of the political leadership. So, you know, while it sounds like these dialogues are a good thing, and on a general matter, they are, we had them with the Soviet Union. The problem is with China, they just have not worked.
Yeah, I also now want to pivot to the upcoming U.S. elections. How do you think China is viewing the landscape right now, Gordon? And how do you think they would view a Harris presidency versus a Trump presidency?
In Beijing, they talk about two bowls of poison, which means they don't like either of them. But I think that they really don't like President Trump. And the reason is not that he is more anti-China, quote unquote, it's that he's unpredictable. You know, the Chinese can deal with anything. They can deal with hostile American presidents. They do that all the time. But the point is they cannot deal with somebody who they cannot figure out in advance. Remember President Trump in April 2017, when Xi Jinping was at Mar-a-Lago, Trump stood up after dinner, after that beautiful piece of chocolate cake, and said, look, I've just sent 59 missiles into Syria, which was a Chinese friend. And Xi Jinping was flummoxed. And that means for 4 years, he was relatively well behaved. He hasn't been well behaved with Biden, even though Biden does things he doesn't like, because he can read Biden like a book.
We have about a minute left or so, Gordon, but I quickly want to ask you this. As you know, China has stepped up its aggression around Taiwan as well as the Philippine Coast Guard. The ships there, do you think this is kind of a saber rattling? And, you know, do you think it will end once a new administration enters the White House, or do you think it may get worse?
This is going to get worse. When China saber rattles with Taiwan, that's huffing and puffing, because I don't think the Chinese military want to take on that island republic. But on the Philippines, they see it as a weakling. They see it as a big political win and a quick win without casualties. And so they're going to do things which make things even worse. They're going to go too far. We have an obligation to defend the Philippines. This is really serious, Tracy.
It certainly sounds like it, Gordon. What else is on your radar?
The most important thing, I think, is what's happening inside of China, especially with the economy. The economy isn't growing at the 4.7% pace that they claim for the second quarter. It's probably around zero, which means that China can't service its debt, which means that Xi Jinping right now, I think, must be getting a little hysterical, because what he's trying to do to export to the world isn't going to work for very much longer. And that means he has no solutions to his number one problem.
All right. We're going to leave it right there. Gordon, always great to be with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Tracy.
All new developments tonight in the appointing of a Catholic bishop in communist China. The Vatican says that it is satisfied with China's official recognition of the new head for the Diocese of Tianjin. Reuters says the 95-year-old had once been a member of the underground church in China. He is now set to preside over a diocese with around 56,000 faithful. Joining us now from Rome is Frank Rocca, senior Vatican analyst at EWTN News. Frank, great to be with you today. So what's the significance of the Chinese government's recognition of the bishop?
Well, this bishop is a so-called underground bishop. He's 94 years old, and he's part of the Catholic community in China that rejects government control. And as a result, he was imprisoned for a number of years. He's been persecuted. But in recent years, the Vatican has encouraged members of the underground church, including bishops and clergy, to recognize the government-controlled bodies that oversee the church in China. This bishop has finally now done that, and so he was recognized by the government. We expect that he'll be resigning soon, given his age, and then there will be the question of appointing a successor.
Frank, what does this say about relations between the Vatican and the communist government of China?
Well, this is part of a recent series of events that bode well for relations between the Vatican and China. Earlier in the year, after a hiatus, there were three bishops named by agreement of the Vatican and China in Chinese dioceses. In the spring, the head of the Chinese Bishops' Conference came to the Vatican and spoke at a conference alongside Cardinal Secretary of State Cardinal Parolin. And as our colleague Andrea Gagliarducci pointed out in a recent article, The Pope's envoy for Ukraine, Cardinal Zuppi, has been meeting with Chinese counterparts in connection with his Ukraine mission. And that's kind of a backdoor into relations, diplomatic relations, because the Vatican and China don't have diplomatic relations. But there is some diplomatic activity going on. So it's part of a pattern.
Yeah, and more generally speaking, what are the prospects for the Catholic Church and religious freedom in China today?
Well, in October, coming up for renewal is the agreement that the Vatican and China made in 2018 on the appointment of bishops. They agreed that neither side would appoint a bishop, a Catholic bishop, without agreement of the other. And that's likely to be renewed at least for another 2 years in October. So that means that going forward, the hierarchy in China is going to be recognized by the government. But on the other hand, it's also going to be committed to the policy of sinicization or Chinification, which President Xi Jinping has encouraged, which is means conforming or harmonizing Catholicism with Xi Jinping thought and Chinese socialism. So depending on how you look at it, this means that the church in China is getting greater acceptance of its role in public life, but at the same time, it's undergoing more government control. And whether or not that's a gain is a debate that's going on within the church and will continue to go on, I think, in the church in the next years.
All right, Frank, thank you so much for following all this for us. We really appreciate it. Frank Rocco, senior Vatican analyst at EWTN News. Thanks a bunch. Up next on EWTN News Nightly, safe travels. Colin Flynn speaks with the Archbishop of Jakarta for a preview on the Holy Father's trip to Asia. Plus, sea and desert. Pope Francis raises awareness on the plight of migrants. Indonesia is preparing for its first papal visit in nearly four decades. The predominantly Muslim nation is the first stop of the Holy Father's visit to Southeast Asia, the longest trip of his pontificate. EWTN News Vatican correspondent Colin Flynn recently sat down with the Archbishop of Jakarta for a preview.
I know, Cardinal, it is hard to talk in general terms about Indonesia when you look at the scale and the size. 17,000 islands. I read over 1,300 ethnicities. What do you see as the challenges for the church in Indonesia today?
Indonesia is very, what people say, religious countries. People are very religious. Everybody has religion.
Yes.
But we have to put a question mark, having religion and being religious. People ask me, how come that Indonesia is a religious nation? The corruption is so huge. Human trafficking is becoming more widespread. That is a question from the people. And my answer, more or less, is like that. Yes, that is true. We have religion. But we are not very sure if we really a religious person, having personal relationship with God, which indicator should be the transformation of life.
Yeah. How can someone claim to be religious when they are corrupting the public?
Precisely.
And is that a big problem here, the problem of, for example, corruption?
Oh, big problem here. Big, big problem. If there is no corruption, Indonesia would have become a prosperous country. I always feel very sorry to find that the people there, our brother, the same Indonesian, they have to live such way of living, very poor, very poor.
Finally tonight, Pope Francis speaks out against the treatment of migrants whom he says are crossing seas and deserts in search of a better life.
E questa è una crudeltà della nostra civiltà.
During his weekly talk at the Vatican, the Holy Father noted different barriers and dangers that migrants have to face as they flee wars, persecution, and disasters. Pope Francis also praised the work of those who dedicate themselves to helping and saving migrants, stressing that God is there with them. And we thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Tracy Sable. Good night, and God bless.